Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is the invisible giants, and the numbers to call to get coaching on having what you want and thriving in every area of your life are 866-254-1579 in the United States and Canada. That's 866-254-1579. Outside the United States, you can reach the show by dialing your country code, usually 001, so, which is technically my country code, but I think you know what I mean. 001-760-918-4300. And I'll do my best to get to as many of your calls as I can over the course of the day. And this show, by the way, if you're listening and you thought, didn't you do this show already? I thought you were going to do this show already. I meant to do this show already. I announced this show. And then I was just saying to the guys, it was kind of funny because I was on air and I was going, hello, hello. And somehow the connection didn't quite go. And so they put a replay on and then we started talking and decided to let the replay go. And then I would be back with the show. So technically this is my first show of the new year, which is very exciting. Hope it's exciting for you too. And the topic that I chose is the invisible giants, is also the topic of a post I posted towards the end of the year on the Huffington Post that was turned out to be quite a popular post and got reprinted all over the place. And what I talked about in it is something that may sound a little bit obvious or it may sound horrifying, but it's we're not in control of the universe. Now, in and of itself, that probably doesn't seem like either a big deal or a bad deal. But where it gets a little confusing for people is, well, how does that impact our ability to create what we want in our lives? How does that impact our ability to create lives of meaning and value and joy? How does that impact on our ability to make a difference on the planet if we're not in control of the universe? And so in the post, I share this story. So imagine you're walking along a mountain path with two invisible giants by your side. To the left of the path is a rock face extending up for as far as the eye can see. To the right is a sheer drop extending downwards into apparent nothingness. You're excited at the prospect of finally arriving at your next destination when you see the path ahead of you blocked by an enormous boulder. You push with all your might, but despite your best efforts, you can only move the boulder a few inches. Defeated, but not yet discouraged, you decide to work smarter, not harder. You find a long and sturdy tree branch, and using a small rock that's fallen by the side of the path, you create a lever strong enough to move the rock a full foot away from the wall to your left. It's a tight squeeze, but with only minimal scraping of hands and knees, you're able to sneak through the gap and get through to the other side. You feel an incredible sense of accomplishment at the near completion of your heroic quest and the triumphant conquering of a seemingly unconquerable obstacle. Weary from your efforts, but filled with the adrenaline of victory, you push on your journey towards the final destination. Now, imagine you're back on the mountain path, two invisible giants once again at your side. This time, when you come across the enormous boulder, you give it a try, but quickly realize your strength will not be enough. You turn to the giants for assistance, and between them, they easily remove the boulder long enough for you to pass through and continue on your way. You feel no particular sense of accomplishment. You don't want or need a medal for your efforts, but you do feel humbled by the enormity of the journey you've set out on, and grateful for the fact that you don't have to travel that journey on your own. That energy of humility and gratitude carries you effortlessly forward on the path towards the final destination. Now, the question, obviously, is, well, what are the giants? It's a metaphor, right? It's not just a story about giants. This must be something about my life. Well, here's, in my mind, the two invisible giants, the two huge resources that are always available to us that we tend to overlook when we're setting out on our own creative project. And the first is what I just would refer to as the creative force. It's the divine mind. It's the universal human potential. Because one of the things that we've all got in common is access to a deeper wisdom, the ability to think new thoughts. the capacity to have fresh insights and fresh ideas from out of the blue. And when we do, we have hope. Even knowing that that's part of the human potential gives us hope, and it gives us energy. And where does it come from? Well, it comes from nothing. It comes from nowhere. It comes from the fertile void. It comes from the deeper potential of the mind. So some people call it the creative mind. Some people call it impersonal intelligence. I often just talk about it as the blue. Like, it came from out of the blue, out of a clear blue sky. It's a field of pure potential where possibilities that don't yet exist are just waiting for us to think them into being. And that giant resource is always available. And I have yet to come across a situation in my life. I've yet to see a client come across a situation in their lives that doesn't succumb to that simple, quiet wisdom. Now, how do you access it? Well, basically, you access it by not filling in the blanks. You access it by not forcing it. It comes naturally into the space that's left by you not running around trying to figure it out and force an answer. And as you get more comfortable resting in the unknown, as you get more comfortable not knowing, I wrote a tip this week. You can read the tips at supercoach365.com. And we've got them all up there for free now. And so I wrote a tip called the big nothing, because a lot of people, you know, they hear creating from nothing and hanging out in the unknown. And they go into their brain and they go, well, nope, I got nothing. And wonder why they're not inspired. Well, that's the little nothing. Your brain is the little nothing because it's already full of everything you already know. The big nothing is beyond the brain. It's the space within, it's consciousness. It's the untapped potential of the mind. And when you hang out in that nothing, anything can come. So that's one of our two giants. What's the other giant? Well, the other giant, by the way, I will take calls. And if you want to get in, numbers to call are 866-254-1579. That's toll-free in the United States and Canada. Outside the U.S., 001-760-918-4300. But, you know, what is this other giant? Well, the other giant is the invisible web of 7 billion people. Right? You probably know there are at least 7 billion people living on the planet along with you and me. So that's 7 billion and one, I guess. Now, you probably don't know many of them. Right? You probably know anywhere from 250 to 2,500 of them. That's the usual number. And you might not know how to get to the particular ones that you think you need, but right now, there are people who could assist you in solving your biggest problem. Right now, there are people on the planet who relatively easily could help you in creating your dreams and would be happy to if they knew what it was you wanted to create and were enrolled in the value of its creation. In other words, they bought into, yeah, this would be cool. Wow, yeah, that's great. Let me help. How can I help? Why don't we make more use of that invisible web? Well, part of it is that hero thing, right? We want to be heroes. We want to, you know, I do it, mommy. You know, we want to win through willpower. We don't want to risk rejection. We don't want somebody to say no to us because somehow we think no hurts. Right? We've got all this thinking around no. Right? It's a sound. No. Right? There's no pain in that sound. Any pain or fear that we associate with the word no, or the tone, no, 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 right? That, we make it up. We make it up in thought, but we think the feeling of it comes from somebody saying it. There's really nothing to somebody saying no, other than an expression that, at least as things stand, they don't want to. Now, The other thing, the other way people go horribly wrong with the invisible web of 7 billion people is they go to these people, but they do it with arrogance. They do it with a sense of entitlement. Well, come on, you've got all this and I don't have anything, so you owe me. Hey, I mean, it's not fair that you've got this and I've only got that, so, you know, come on. Or they approach it with desperation. You know, there are certain, because of what I do, people reach out to me and sometimes there's a sense in the emails of, you know, help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope. And I get the sincerity of it. But I know for myself and I know for a lot of other people, I don't want to be your savior, right? I'll do what I can for as many people as I can, but I got my own life. I love helping out, right? That's my whole career. My whole life is about finding ways to be of assistance, to contribute to the well-being of the planet. But I figured out a while ago, I can't do that by trying to save everybody. Now, sometimes, for whatever reason, somebody comes and just shares what they're up to. And I get enrolled into it. I just think, wow, what a cool thing to be up to. How can I help? And there's really no rhyme or reason to it. And that's true of every other person on the planet. It's true of you. There are times where you're approached by somebody, and maybe even with arrogance, and maybe even with desperation, where you just feel like helping. You're just moved to help. You're moved to be of assistance. There are other times, for whatever reason, because you're caught up in your own stuff, or because there's just something off-putting about the approach, or because you just don't get it. You don't get why they would need that, and it's really inconvenient for you to provide it, where you say no. No harm. No foul. Now, sometimes we don't ask because we don't want to hear no, but sometimes we don't want to ask because we don't want people to be put in the awkward position of being asked. As if there's something inherent in being asked that obligates the person to give a certain answer. Now, for some people, they feel that, right? If you feel obligated to say yes when somebody asks you something, you probably find it hard to ask other people for things because you don't want them to feel obligated. Guess what? Not everyone does. In fact, lots of people don't. But whyever you don't ask, or however you've learned to ask effectively or ineffectively, that invisible web of 7 billion people can supply you with pretty much everything you'd possibly need in the world of form. But most of the time, you do have to ask. And chances are that your asking needs to take you beyond your current circle. It needs to take you outside of the five people that you most often reach out to. Now, sometimes it doesn't, but often it does. And when you get focused on the benefits for you, the benefits to them, the benefits for the planet, it's surprising how often people are delighted to assist you on your quest. So even though we started this by talking about how, well, you know, we're not in control of the universe, in another sense, it is up to us not to make things happen, but to take the time to make the space to listen for the whispers of the creative mind and to make the requests of others that are going to move us forward in creating what we most want to bring into being. Now, how do you know you're off track? Well, you probably feel heroic. You probably feel like, you know, I know for me, it absolutely is. You know, somebody says, well, what do you want, a medal? And I'm thinking, yeah, God, this is hard. I want a medal. I deserve one. Well, what I've come to see is that lets me know, oh, I'm trying to do this myself. I'm moving forward as if there aren't a couple of invisible giants on my side and on my team, supporting me, available to me. The creative mind, but also beyond the creative mind, to just the invisible web of all the people around who can help. And that's kind of a fun thing. That's kind of a cool thing to have access to. So let's go to the phones, and let's begin in Miami with Marcy. Hey, Marcy, welcome to the show. Happy New Year. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi there. I'm actually studying to be a life coach. So my past is home people as well. And new path, well, it's probably a very old path, but it's a new path in terms of creating abundance. I've not yet created a financial situation that's comfortable for my daughter and I. And even though I'm helping others in their own
So, Marcy, because I'm having a lot of trouble hearing you, let me read what they wrote on my board, and you can tell me if that's actually the question. How about that?
Okay,
so on my board, it says, becoming a life coach, looking to create financial comfort. Do you have any advice? And this is the bit I don't understand. Do you have any advice on how I can keep myself from thinking I'm going to do well financially?
No,
I'm guessing that's not quite it.
Well. I want to do well financially.
Right. Okay, perfect. That makes sense. Now, how much of it is about becoming a life coach and how much of it is about financial comfort?
I want financial comfort. I'm a single mother of a beautiful daughter. I also know the only way I can be happy in this life is to give. So my thought was to combine the two.
Okay. So here's what I'll offer you just as a starting point for your exploration. And I don't normally do this, but because we do have a lot of noise, I'm going to let you sign off and then I'll do my best to answer as best I can. So what do I have to offer for Marcy that also probably is true for you if you want financial comfort in your life? Generally speaking, it's a lot easier to create what we actually want than what we think we can get or what we think is the way to get it. So if I want financial comfort, there's a couple of things that I can not know definitively, but I can sort of make a pretty good guess if financial comfort sounds like a good idea. The first is probably, and this might not be true. So Marcy, I'm talking to you, but I'm not attempting to talk for you. So if what I say is inaccurate, don't worry. You can curse me silently from your home, but hopefully you'll also hear something and hopefully you won't curse me at all. But generally when somebody talks about financial comfort or financial security or financial ease, they've conflated an amount of money with our innate well-being as humans. Now, that's not a tragic thing to do. That's not ignorant. That's not stupid. That's pretty darned human. That's how we're taught it works. More money equals more comfort equals more security. But having spent a lot of time with people who have a lot of money, I promise you it doesn't work that way. And having spent some time with people who have virtually no money and have a ton of comfort and security, I can promise you it doesn't work that way. They're two separate things. Our sense of comfort and ease is an inner thing. In fact, babies are born with it. We are born with it as babies. That innate sense of well-being, that innate mental health, that innate knowing that we're all right. And the good feeling that comes with just resting in the infinite, resting as pure consciousness, uncontaminated by personal thinking, as Sid Banks, the enlightened welder that I talk about all the time on this show, used to say. Security, that sense of security, it comes from knowing that we'll be all right regardless. That regardless of what happens in the world of form, regardless of the fact that in a moment we might suffer, in a moment we might feel pain, fundamentally, we'll be okay. The invisible safety net will catch us. And even if our circumstances fall apart, our well-being can never be taken away from us. I have a theory, and boy, is it just a theory. And boy, can you switch off the radio for a minute and then come back in a minute if you think, you're easily offended. But I have a theory about Christ on the cross. All right, I've got a theory. You know the bit in the story where he calls out, God, why hast thou forsaken me? Well, it seems to me that if I lived in complete harmony with the God mind, with the creative mind, with the larger mind, with the universal intelligence, and I was used to that feeling of being at one with the Father, and my metaphor was of a Father, my metaphor was one that this energy was separate from me in some ways and was like a loving parent. And then in the physical pain of being nailed to a cross, which I gotta say sounds awfully painful, my consciousness contracted down and I temporarily lost my connection to the whole. And I shrunk down into my very human body and the incredible amount of pain I was experiencing. I can imagine it would feel like the loving Father had forsaken me. But it's also easy for me to imagine that when the wave of pain passed and my consciousness expanded back out to what we call Christ consciousness, to God consciousness, to larger consciousness, I would be at one again. I would be at peace again. Now, I'm going to guess that whatever you think not having enough money might cost you, it's probably not crucifixion. Right? I'm not trying to create guilt here. Right? I realize that's not so hard. Yeah, well, you're not being crucified, are you? Get over it. I don't mean it like that. I'm just saying that it is human, very human, to look outside of ourselves for comfort and security. We will never really find it there. All we can find is temporary respite from our own worry and doubt. Now, that is not to say that there isn't a value in creating enough money to pay for the home that you like to live in, enough money to pay for the type of food that you want to eat, enough money to buy your lovely daughter lovely things that she likes to wear. But it's actually much easier to create the money when you're not looking for the money to do emotions for you. When you're not looking to the money to save you. I sometimes equate it to going to a bar and picking up cute guys, right? And it's like, you know, do you think you're gonna find it easier, you know, when you show up as yourself and just have a nice time, or when you show up going, hey guy, you know, want to buy me a drink and save me from the existential angst of being and make sure that I never, ever, ever need to fear or suffer ever again, ever, right? It's probably not going to go so well. And in the same way, it's much easier to create money when you're just creating money. So that was a very long answer to a question I made up. And so hopefully that was of value. If you want to actually talk to me about it, you can go on the Facebook, on facebook.com/ MNeill, MNEILL. And that's my professional page, my fan page. And you can, if you've liked the page, you'll see a post about the radio show, and feel free to post on there and to post your thoughts. And I go on there after the show and I'll respond as best I can. If that was relevant for you, or if that was not relevant for you, or if you want to refine the answer, or you want to ask further questions. But in the meantime, the numbers to call are, oh dear, I've lost the numbers. You know, I've been doing this show for, what are we at, 11 years? And I cannot for the life of me, I don't think the numbers have changed in 11 years. Here we go. 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States or Canada, outside the U.S. 001. 760-918-4300. And we're going to go next to Michael in Oregon. Michael, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Oh, hey, Michael. Oh, Michael, how you doing?
I'm really well.
Good. I was jotting down notes as I was listening to your Jesus story. And what I thought is what you described, that moment is, as you've described similarly, is when you realize, when you remember that we feel our thinking. Mm-hmm. It's really like what he would have identified with changed his consciousness, and that was the shift. Similarly, as saying that,
yeah, it is. It's on a much less grand level, but it's the exact same shift.
Mm-hmm. So, Michael, why did I call in? I am.
I was going to ask you that.
Thank you. But I'm glad I get to ask you right now, though. I am in the space between I'm not settling in any aspect of my life currently. I left all kindly, sweetly, a relationship/job to, you know, to be happy in life. I am more than ever have been aware that we feel our thinking. I had an insight some time ago about a month and a half ago while listening to a show of yours. After many years of listening, an insight that hit me that I knew that it's never leaving me again. So I'm in a good space. I'm quiet about it. All of my inner guidance, every time I ask, like, should I be doing something because I'm going crazy? I don't have anything to do. And I can't explain that beyond saying it's like my spirit is not into doing the things that I would be doing had I had all this time on my hands. And so I don't have anything to do, and yet I need to look for work and all of those things, and I'm doing those things, and yet every time I sort of go to my inner guide and see, like, am I supposed to be doing something? Like, what am I supposed to be doing? The only thing I hear back, which I've judged a little as cheesy, but it's true, is like, you're amazing. You're doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing. Sit still. Everything's wonderful. These are the messages I get back, like, continuously for months on end about this. And so I feel I'm in a conundrum of I'm having a hard time not having something to do, yet my inner guidance tells me I'm fine. I don't need to do anything, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
So why is that a conundrum? Like, if I'm driving down the freeway up to, let's say I'm coming up to visit you. Okay, I'm driving up from LA to Oregon, and I'd probably start on the 5 from here. So I go up the 5, and for about 450 miles, every time I check in with the nav system to see if I'm supposed to take an exit or do something, it goes, nope, you're good. Why is that a conundrum?
Well, I had an immediate answer when you asked me that, which was that maybe the conundrum is what I'm having or created to do now. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's like the thing that I've, like I said, maybe the conundrum is the thing I'm doing.
Yeah, I mean, look,
I'm trying to fill my mind with some activity or something.
Right, I don't know. Here's what I taught a program this weekend. We were doing Supercoach Academy, but we also did an evening talk with my friends Kathy Casey and Mark Howard, and we did an evening talk on how to stifle your creative genius. And one of the things that Kathy pointed out, that she points out to the young men in juvenile detention, she does a lot of work in the prison system, is they'll often say, you know, she reported a conversation where, you know, they were stealing cars and joyriding, and that's why they were in there. And she said, you know, why did you do that? And it was a genuinely curious question. It wasn't a sort of, why did you do that? It was just like, hey, why did you do that? And they went, we were bored.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she said to them, well, here's the thing. Boredom, do you know what boredom is? And they went, well, not really. And she said, well, boredom is what you feel when your head is racing faster than life.
Mm-hmm.
And when your thoughts slow down to the speed of life, when they slow down and they're not moving so fast, life becomes really interesting. Whatever's right. happening around you becomes fascinating. You know, each cup of tea becomes the best cup of tea.
Mm-hmm. It's the present. It's like you're out of time.
Yeah. And so my sense is that's all. Sounds like you're driving up the 5, and you're doing fine, but your head's just racing a little bit ahead of your car right now.
Which goes right in line with every message every wonderful thing I hear from within myself, from my inner guidance.
I am sorry to affirm that the God within you was right.
That just needs to peace out, and it's all okay.
Yeah. Drop the mic. All right. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Michael. Bye-bye.
Bye. You know, I mean, sometimes it is that simple, right? Now, that's not I don't want you to think that's a generic answer. By the way, Janet and Lupe, you will be next in the queue. I don't want you to think that is, you know, I say that to everybody. I mean, if I'd gotten a sense that really there was something for him to do, and he just was putting it off because of fear or self-sabotage or insecurity, we could have talked about that. But sometimes there's just nothing to do. I remember actually being 23, fresh out of drama school, and I'd started working at a bookshop in London called The Mystic Trader, which was owned by Stuart Wilde. And I went in one day, and I just felt the sense of lost, like what am I supposed to do with my life? And I'm not getting any guidance. And I remember Ian, the guy running the shop, just saying to me, well, maybe right now there's just nothing for you to be doing outside. And there's just stuff going on inside. And it made me think of that bit where you've planted seeds, but you can't see a plant yet. There's really not much to do. Right? I mean, maybe there's a once a day you can pour a little water on it. Maybe it makes a difference to talk to it. I don't know. Sounds nice. I like the idea of that. But you're not being lazy by not digging up the seed and trying to make it grow faster. It's just that stage in the evolution of the creation of your life where there's not a lot for you to do. And if you are willing to not do what is not there to be done, you can have a really wonderful time in that stage. And then you can be really, really rested and ready for when it's time to dive back into the fray. Let's go out to LA, and I suppose technically out of my studio into LA, and let's talk with Janet. Janet, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I am well.
Good. Thank you for taking my call. Well, actually, I have time to call in. I have recently like 5 days off of work because I have a new job, and it's a job that I've been wanting for a long time. I have the opportunity to work here. I just got it. You know, I left the job I had for about 10 years because I wanted to do cooking, and I have the opportunity now. So, I just went for it. I left security. I left, you know, I was making good money at this other job, but I just decided, you know what, like, it's time for me to move on with a career that I love and mm-hmm. just to be happy. So I left that stable feeling I had. And so basically I started now 2 weeks at this place, and from the beginning it was going well. All of a sudden I go into work and I see that I'm cut off the schedule. And you know, they knew I left this other job full time to come here, and I was told I'd be full time. So now it's like I asked the chef and I said, you know, what's going on? You know, I've cut from the schedule. And he said, oh yeah, you know, you missed the macaroni sauce the other day, we were short, and something else he mentioned. And I said, oh, so my hours are cut now. He's like, yep. And I said, you know, I just felt at that moment like so easily I had security, and now, you know, I have 5 days off looking for another job because of this one thing. And I'm feeling a little bit despair and rejection from something that I've wanted and I know that I deserve because of this one thing with this one person that just decided to pretty much, I don't want to say screw me over, but kind of like put me on hold.
Do you know, Janet, if I had a nickel for every person I talked to who lost their job because they got the macaroni sauce wrong, I'd be a rich man. So can I jump in a minute and then you can tell me if I'm on track or off track?
Okay.
So there's something, and I talked about this earlier, but now I can talk about it in dialogue with you and you can feedback. You said from the beginning, you talked about, well, I left the security of this. I left the stability of this and I went to this and I thought I had stability, but now I don't have stability. Now, when I say, and I say it in a really confident tone of voice as if I know what I'm talking about, your security and stability have nothing to do with your employment. Mm-hmm. What do you hear?
I'm stable. I mean, I'm okay no matter what.
And does that sound like a lovely affirmation or true?
Yes. But what the thing is, you know, I can make things positive. Like I've never felt this way, what I'm feeling. Like I've spent the past couple days very emotional and just bursts of tearing up. And I'm just trying to understand. I'm not that, you know, it's like finally coming out. Like I feel like I don't deserve this. What the hell is happening? You know, like I work so hard. So what I'm doing is I'm looking for another job. Obviously I can't just wait, you know, and like, So I have actually tomorrow my second interview at another restaurant because I don't want to give up because of this one thing. And it was like my first shot, you know, and it didn't go well.
So I feel right. What I'm about to say is making me feel very old that I want to say it, but I'm going to say it anyway, and I'm going to risk being thought of as very old. In my years of experience, one thing I've learned is that people can be dicks.
Yeah.
Right? That's just a truth about life.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean they're automatically bad people. It doesn't mean that they're not having bad days and lost in their thinking. It doesn't mean that, you know, they, all it means is that I don't know any, I was joking about the macaroni, but like I've worked with people in every profession, most professions, and I don't know that I've come across a profession where there aren't people who behave like dicks.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's going to be a problem, you're going to suffer.
You know, that's the thing. So even though he said, well, next week, you know, management loves me at the restaurant. Everyone loves me. They got me in there. You know, they're like, we love your attitude, Janet. Like, you're awesome. Like, they wanted me to win. You know, they all supported me. And now I get, like, guys that, like, stopping me from this thing that I, like, want so bad. But it's like, if I continue here, he said, he will. Well, because he didn't come to me to communicate. I had to go to him, like, several times. I said, well, what do I got to do, you know, next week if I come in, you know, and I improve? He's like, well, you know, then, yeah, you know, we'll give you more hours. So I'm like, uh-oh, this is, you know, my intention.
Janet, here's, okay, hang on. Here's my question for you. How easy do you want to make it?
Excuse me?
How easy do you want to make it to be knocked down? Like, right. So this is the thing. If one guy being a dick, because he's having a bad day, maybe because he doesn't like that he sees you as coming in and everybody's on your side and he doesn't think you've earned it yet. Maybe because you make him feel insecure. Who knows why, right? We can make up reasons why. But if one person can do one thing for 1 week and that's enough to get you to question everything and give up, again, you're not going to get very far in life.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. I got no problem, like it would matter if I did, but I got no problem with you getting upset about it, because I probably would get upset about it. Anyone would probably get upset about it. I got no problem with you for a day, 2 days, you know, an hour, a minute, feeling like, oh God, what's the point? Oh, I'm a loser. Oh, I'm terrible. Oh, why did this happen to me? Like, sure. But that's like, if that's actually going to be enough to keep you off your game, you need more game. And I think you've got it. Like, I don't think for a minute that that's all you got.
Thank you. So you understand why I'm looking for another restaurant.
Well, you know, here's the thing. You know, if you need more hours to pay your rent, sure.
Yes.
But
yes,
if you're going to another restaurant thinking that that restaurant isn't going to have somebody who treats you like a dick for whatever reason at some point, you're going to be sadly mistaken.
Okay. I felt like staying here is just, I'm like, oh man, I don't know, like, if he's got it out for me already. You know.
But see, he may not have it out for you. Right. If this was the movie, right, and he was Bradley Cooper and you were the pretty girl, I can't remember the girl in the last Bradley Cooper movie. But right, if it was that movie, and then what he would be doing is he would see potential in you and he would be testing you. He would be forging you. He would be creating the difficult environment for you to push up against so you would find your inner strength and resilience. So when it came time for you to run your own restaurant and to run your own kitchen, you would have that inner strength and not be dependent on the good opinion of others.
Okay. Okay, so, but you're telling me to stick it out then.
Look, Jen, I mean, if you're going to listen to me, sure, but I wouldn't do it because I'm saying it. I'm saying it because you ain't going to find the situation where nobody ever disses you or treats you badly in the world of humans.
Okay. I was, like, just feeling disrespected, you know, and bullied.
Well, you know what? Maybe you were being disrespected, but who cares?
Yeah, okay. I like that.
Thanks, Jen. And, hey, please, phone back or post on Facebook. Let us know how you're doing.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. You know, I mean, You know, this is that was beautiful. I love that because that's just reality. Like I remember I've told this story I think on air before, but I had a Hollywood client who'd come out here and they were they got their first big break on television and it all looked like it was going great. And then I got a call from their manager saying, "Hey, can we come out and have an emergency coaching session with you?" And I was like, I mean, I find emergency coaching sessions don't happen that often in my world, but I was like, yeah, come on out. So they came out to the office and we had an emergency coaching session. They told me what had happened. And essentially, you know, the contracts had all been set, the deal had been made. And then at the last minute, the company did a complete bait and switch, the production company, and essentially tried to steal back, I forget what it was, but like half the money that had been on the table. And they were really worked up and really upset. And we sat and we chatted for a while and we chatted about the thought created nature of our experience. And we talked about the intelligence within the invisible giant of creative force where this solution would come for the situation they were in. But the bit of the conversation that I remember most was at one point, the guy said to me, "Why? I just want to know one thing. Why am I attracting so many sharks?" And I said to him, "Because you're swimming in a shark tank." And he just laughed and his manager laughed. And that was it. He was fine from then on. He worked it out. They did wind up doing a pilot, didn't go, went on to do other things. But so often something goes not the way we think it should or not the way we would like it to. And we make up that means something about us. That means something about the place that we are. Maybe that means it's the wrong job. Maybe that means this. Maybe that means that. When invariably, it's just what happens in certain fields, in certain situations, in any time you're out working with real human beings. And if you know that that's just the territory, that's not something wrong with your wagon, then you can keep moving forward and you can keep being responsive to that inner knowing and you can keep letting yourself be buoyed back, lifted back up to the surface by your innate resilience. And you can keep being guided by your inner wisdom. And that's a pretty cool thing. So let's stay in Los Angeles, but let's go to Lupe. Lupe, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi, Coach. Thanks for taking my call.
You are welcome.
I would like to talk about, okay, so when Fat, Sick, Nearly Dead came out, I was just so excited about it that I held screenings, and then after the screenings, I would have juice tastings. And now there's foodmatterstv.com, and I'm a member of that, so I've been watching all these, you know, movies. And each one, I can see how they would help different people move themselves into a healthier state. And I feel like I would be a good, like, spokesperson. And my idea is that this whole new website needs, like, a host that can, like, give the average Joe who doesn't care about their health, someone like me, saying, "Here, this is why you have to watch this. You know, this is the amazing part in this movie. And, oh, in this movie, you should do this." So my idea is that I would film myself talking about different movies that I've seen and the whys that I personally think they should watch them. And then put myself on a green screen and then put clips of the different movies on there. I don't know how to go about doing it. That's the only way my mind can think right now. And so I'm like, that can never happen. So I'm not going to do it. But
okay,
when I'm watching
so
movies, I just get so excited. I feel like this is what I'm supposed to be doing.
Okay. So I'm going to do something. It's kind of a weird thing to do on air, but I'm typing green screen stages in Los Angeles. And let's see, here we go. Green screen studio, green screen downtown, $60 an hour, green screen studio, green screen stage, green screen and cycloramas, green screen studio, green screen LA, green screen downtown, CML studio, green screen, best green screen studio. So, okay. So page one has 20 green screens. Looks like it probably cost you $60 to $120 to do it.
Okay, cool.
So sometimes it is that easy, right? Sometimes Google is all you need, right? That's another way of accessing the invisible giant of 7 billion people.
True.
And the beautiful, but here's the beautiful thing, right? So do it. And then you'll see. And it might turn out not to go anywhere. It might turn out you do it and you go, oh man, turns out I suck at this. I had no idea. Might be that it's brilliant and you go, wow, this is really cool. And people see it and they go, my God, this is really cool. And it leads to the next thing.
Okay.
I don't know, but I know that if you have a clear next step that's takeable, it's probably worth taking it.
Yeah, that's what I needed, was someone to, like, hear me and then, like, do what you just did.
That's cool. I will happily type things into Google for you anytime.
No, because...
I could have been really cool, right? I could have. I didn't have to tell you. I didn't have to tell you I was typing into Google. I could have just pretended I knew all that.
That's true. And then I'm like, well, who am I? Like, why are they going to listen to me? You know, I don't have any, like, you know, I'm an actor.
I do. I do.
All.
And here's the thing, right? If you had to be somebody for people to listen, that would be a fair question. But you have to have something to say worth listening to. Right. One of my favorite stories, one of my friends, Steve Chandler, who's a coach, and you know,
I love him.
Great. So he works in a different modality than me, but I've known him for years. And I remember him telling a story about the first big corporate training gig he got. And, you know, if I'm remembering it right, it was, you know, in his world, it was like a 40 grand gig, and it was a big thing. And he'd never done that kind of work before, but he really thought that he could. And he made a presentation. He came in, he actually did like a mini workshop with the board, and it went really well. And he was really excited about it. And then one person asked him the one question that he was dreading. And they said, so, Mr. Chandler, what's your background? And he said, well, I'm an alcoholic recovering. I'm divorced. My wife is in a mental institution. None of my children are in prison at the moment. I've run an advertising agency that went bankrupt, and I forget, he had like a couple of health issues. and the guys are just looking at him. And one of them finally says, well, can you help us? And he said, oh yeah. And they hired him.
Awesome.
I like that story. It reminds me
that
it isn't about what you've done. It's about what you can do.
Right. And I believe I can do this, so thank you.
Beautiful. Have fun. Let us know how it goes.
I will.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
You know, I mean, that's the beauty of it, is sometimes it is that simple. You know, because you don't have to solve the whole thing. You just have to take the next step. And sometimes you don't know what the next step is, but sometimes you do. And sometimes, like, there's things you can Google and there's things you can't, right? Where do I find a green screen in LA? Turns out to be something you can Google. How do I find my inner strength? That's going to come from finding your inner wisdom. Let's go to Minneapolis and let's talk to Eva. Eva, welcome to the show. Happy New Year. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi, Michael. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
So I've been doing work and school at the same time, and even though I don't have this problem at work, at school, you know, we have all these group projects that are assigned, and the group dynamics ends up being so dysfunctional that it's stressful, it's frustrating, and then it stresses me out to a huge degree and makes me very intimidated for the next group projects. Like, my spring semester has started and I'm in a different class now and there's another group project and I'm just sweating and I'm not even interested in putting my name out there to form a group because I'm just so, I'm expecting something very unpleasant, just like going to the dentist and expecting, you know, this is not going to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure how to, that really puts a huge damper on my enthusiasm as well as energy.
Which would make sense because,
it just makes me negative. You know, it just makes me just really, what is that word? Apprehension, that's the word.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure, you know, how to
Well, so here's my question. Like, why would you buy that made up version of the future?
Because the last three times, it happened, 3 out of 4. And when I brought this up to the instructor, he actually just figured out I was the problem. And then I do not see anything done about it.
So
I don't expect anything to have changed. The only difference is these are different group of students, so maybe not.
So putting aside the, you know, whether it's you or them or the structure or anything, because it's probably everything contributes to it, right?
Yeah.
There could be a gazillion things. Do you think that you could learn to do your bit of it better?
Well, I thought about it. I'm like, okay, well, if people are not contributing to the group work like they should, and they're not communicating that they're not going to contribute, and you're just waiting around for the deadline, and you can ask them multiple times, and then nothing's happening, I'm kind of not sure what else to do.
Well, so here, that's interesting, because that's like an answer to a different question. That's an answer to a question of, do you know what else to do? My question is, do you think that you could learn to do it better? For example, do you think that it's possible that somebody could come in and engage that group in a way that they're not currently engaged?
I don't believe it, but it's possible.
Okay, so this is the group. this is the one unreachable group on Earth, and you got stuck there.
No, it's not the group itself. I just don't think the instructor will do that. Like, the instructors seem to have the mindset that, well, we'll just throw them in there, and part of the group project is you learning to work with, you know, everybody else.
Right. Well, okay, here's the level at which I can respond, because I don't know enough about the situation or the people or the instructor, and I can't coach them at this, you know, in this form. But here's what I can say is, one of two things will be true. Either there will be things you could do that will change the dynamic in a way that makes engagement go up instead of down. And there are probably things you could do that would make the dynamic change in ways that engagement went down instead of up. So if that were true, then what would make, if you engage with that project, there's a decent chance that you will be successful in getting the group a little bit and maybe ultimately a lot more engaged than they currently are. So that's one possibility. Now, the other possibility is there's absolutely nothing that can be done to make that group engage anymore, in which case you're still off the hook, because, well, okay, that's just how this group works. And, you know, you don't have to give it any more thought or energy than that, because that's just how it's going to go.
Yeah, I mean, some people do engage anyways from the beginning. It's just the ones that are, I don't want to use the word really that much to say passive aggressive, because of course people can argue with that concept or the description. But those people, no matter what you do, that they will not really engage. I mean, it's a pattern of behavior that
right.
is rewarded by the instructors. Or
okay,
rather,
so listen,
not
I'm up against the break. So I'm gonna take you off, and I'm gonna just share a general idea that hopefully will be helpful to Eva, but will also hopefully be relevant to anyone who's listening. And it kind of relates to what we were talking about a little earlier with the restaurant, is to the extent that we think the power is outside of us, the power is in the situation, the power is in others, we are going to live life as victims. We have no choice, because the power seems to be outside of us. To the extent that we see that creative power is always within us and available to us, we will either find a way or make our peace with there not being a way. So thank you. It's fun to be back. I'll be back with brand new shows for the next month or two as well. You can check us out online at supercoach.com. Read the blog at supercoach365.com. Until next week, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.